Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The confrontation with Russia, direct, staring across the Atlantic, Washington to Moscow, and then the election of Donald Trump and a new path. Conversation with Moscow, a ceasefire engineered in some fashion in the Black Sea by counselors of President Putin and President Trump, and Europe in between, and what to make of remarks in Europe that are surprisingly 20th century Cold War and not 21st century, we can work this out. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, writing most recently about language I've heard routinely reporting from London to Berlin to Milan, certainly in Paris and the south of France, but I hadn't put it all together. Anatole, a very good evening to you. I've been hearing this language in many tongues, which is Moscow's not to be trusted. Ukraine is the first of their appetite. They're coming for us. I hear it from Warsaw. I hear it from surprising places such as Moldova. I also hear it from Ukraine, repeated again and again. After us, it's your turn. And yet there's no evidence right now that Russia has the resources or the ambition to take on all of Europe. But Europe is talking as if it's, what, 1950 and not 2025. Why is that? What happened?
Well, obviously, the Russian invasion of Ukraine happened, which was a tremendous shock. But on the other hand, I mean, as everyone has been writing, and in this case quite correctly, you know, not just Putin, but so many Russians have a particular obsession with Ukraine. And it's not just strategic. It's also because, you know, of the Russian state originated in Ukraine, all the things we know, the huge Russian minority in Ukraine, the cultural links, the ethnic links, the naval base at Sevastopol. I mean, none of this applies to the Baltic states, let alone Poland. And I think what has happened is that three things have come together. One is this shock at the invasion. Although, you know, why people expected Russia to play by EU rules when it wasn't a member of the EU, outside the EU, given, you know, what America was doing elsewhere and other people, I have no idea. But anyway, the shock had a big impact. Then there is the... Well, I think, you know, with the Poles and the Balts, what we've done is we've confused sympathy for their historical sufferings at the hands of the Soviet Union, and of course, in the case of the Poles, at the hands of Russia, with agreement with the attitudes that come out of that. And I often say, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the victim of a crime. You know, at the hands of a criminal from an ethnic minority. We sympathize with the victim, but we don't necessarily agree with all the attitudes that have come out of that. And I think that, you know, a lot of these attitudes are frankly irrational. The Balts always said that, you know, Article 5 is their, you know, critical defense. But they themselves have been trying to dilute that by extending it to Ukraine, where there really is, I mean, not just doubt, there's a certainty that we wouldn't fight to defend Ukraine. And they didn't seem to realize that this actually, you know, weakens their own security. And I think, you know, sensible, you know, analysts speaking from a distance should be telling them that. But I think the third thing that's happened is that there is this belief in Europe now, which is, you know, to a considerable degree justified, if of course it's done right, which is that Europe does need to rearm, that, you know, it has allowed its armed forces to decay to a dangerous extent if America can't be relied on. But every government in Europe is facing huge budgetary constraints. You know, in Britain, the last budget has included swingeing cuts to many social welfare benefits, you know, provoking a revolt on the left wing of the Labour Party. Now, in these circumstances, asking for huge military increases is politically very difficult unless you can convince, you know, voters and parliamentarians that, you know, that they are in desperate danger of being attacked by the Russian bear. And so I think, you know, this element of calculation, you know, becomes mixed up with these two other elements. But, you know, into a, you know, a mixture which makes rational debate very difficult, because I'm actually writing something at the moment about the military lessons of the Ukraine war. And, you know, what I'm saying is that what Ukraine has proved is that with huge numbers of relatively low-cost weapons, you can actually fight a much more powerful adversary to a standstill. Europe now is thinking, you know, of spending huge amounts more money on tanks, for example. Well, tanks have proved astonishingly ineffective in the Ukraine war. Whereas, you know, if we want to stop the Russians, we need drones, landmines, artillery, anti-aircraft missiles, anti-tank missiles, all, you know, all these kinds of things, which really have proved very effective.
Your essay on these matters, however, puts together this alarm that the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming, with the alarm about Donald Trump return to the White House. And you give us the example of a French senator, Claude Malouret, who spoke most recently in this month using very harsh language, putting together Trump and Putin, calling Mr. Trump a traitor, capitulating to Putin, Putin collaborator. And that conjoined with the fear of Moscow coming for Paris. You know, I don't think Russia's been in Paris since Alexander the First, maybe for a tourism visit, but not as a military force. But in any event, this all fits very carefully into Putin bashing and Trump bashing, which doesn't make any sense, but there it is. Is it limited just to the French, or is everybody doing it?
No, it's much more widespread than that. Though, of course, there is opposition. Unfortunately, there's opposition from the extreme right and the extreme left. But I have to say, I mean, you know, even Russians who are bitterly anti-Putin, and even actually hardline Russians who are more hardline than Putin, they all say, I mean, an attack on NATO, ridiculous. I mean, all this Russian bluster has been intended to stop NATO intervening in Ukraine and going to war with us. Why on earth would we want to start a war, which even, you know, in its European wing, you know, has multiple times our economy, our population? It would be a catastrophe, and what would we gain? And one Russian friend, you mentioned Paris, he said, look, you know, Britain doesn't need to worry. You know, if it, by some miracle the Russian army ever got to Paris, you don't think they'd ever leave again, do you? They would settle down in bars and restaurants and stay there. It's really not, I mean, this is not serious. I am disturbed, I have to say, by this, you know, this atmosphere of hysteria.
About Mr. Trump, is he regarded with the same low opinion as Mr. Putin? Are they regarded as the same person?
Well, I mean, in certain respects, as far as the European establishments are concerned, the hatred of Trump is even deeper because, of course, all these establishments for 70 years now or more have relied totally on America for their security. And so this feels like, well, it's turned their whole world upside down, particularly in Britain. And then, of course, for liberal establishments, they detest Trump's ideology. And then, of course, Vice President Vance's speech in Munich, I mean, rattled them, not just because he was, you know, essentially threatening to greatly reduce the U.S. military commitment to Europe, but because he was openly siding, you know, with the European radical right. So this has thrown them, you know, into a state of Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, like Democrats in America, with whom these parties are closely aligned, I mean, you know, something like hatred, really. But the problem is that that is also not a, as Mallory's rather crazed speech shows, that's also not a recipe for cool, objective thinking. And, I mean, look, for the Ukrainians, of course, it's totally different. I mean, of course, they have, my God, they have reasons to fear Russia. But as far as, you know, the existing members of NATO are concerned, you know, they, of course, they do need to rearm. But you see, that's also, it's less actually about spending much more money on defense. It's much more about coordinating the military production and the militaries that they already have. But that is appallingly difficult because the military spending is a you know, a competitive business between different national industries. And the coordination has always been provided by the United States. You know, it does become a question of either you know, I mean, if you take, you know, the army command, do you change the command every year between a German, a Frenchman, an Englishman, and then what happens to the Italians and the Spanish? Or do you basically hand the army over to the French, and then the British and the Germans and the others have to obey French orders forever? You know, they'll accept that from America, but they find it much more difficult to accept it from each other. So, I mean, that, at least as much as the actual levels of spending, is the great obstacle that the Europeans are facing.
I'm speaking to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, and we're speaking of the European disregard for Donald Trump and the European disregard for Vladimir Putin. When we come back, what are they going to do about it? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.